The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good afternoon.
Hey there.
And welcome to another episode of...
Hey there, sports fans.
...of We the People Radio. And I shouldn't talk so fast. That's We the People Radio.
Yeah.
I'm starting to turn
yeah,
into...
You're just kind of spitting it out.
I'm starting to turn into a mobile. I spend too much time with people who are 20 years old.
Yeah.
They all talk like that.
Yeah, they talk with their thumbs, though. You know.
Oh, yeah. The texting. Clickety. I know. Yeah. I can't text with my thumbs.
I can't either.
Yeah. Too spastic. Yeah. I could when I had a BlackBerry, but then my thumbs were always out. I had to go to the chiropractor. Okay. How old am I? 54.
I threw my thumbs out. I got to go on disability.
I had to go in. I'm like, my thumb goes out now. I wrecked my thumb. Get rid of the BlackBerry. Darn BlackBerry. Now that I've confessed everything, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Oh. And our fill-in engineer is in the cone of silence. He's not saying anything.
Well, hello. And this is Jared King.
We usually make you say something, but we forgot to tell you that.
Well, I learned on the fly.
Yeah, it's more fun to have some pratfall.
That's the beauty of radio.
Yeah, they can't see us.
Yeah.
Although we did shower, so that's awesome. Although
you
it's
did?
Hot as hell in here. We should have worn bathing suits.
I know,
brutal.
It was a little warm.
Yikes.
So.
Yes.
Here we are.
All right, so...
What are we going to talk about today?
I have done a ton of updating. Before we do that...
Do you want to do that, the house cleaning stuff first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've done a ton of updating on the website. It's funny, I sent out a promo for today's show, and I also included the archive. You know, I sent out an email through our list, and sent out the archive for the transgender show we did a few weeks ago, and somebody wrote back and said, there are much more pressing issues. We don't care about this.
You know what was really bizarre about that is I heard
I was like,
the
hey.
Following week, I listened to three different talk shows that covered the exact same thing we're talking
about
Sunday. I think they're copying us.
And then the dopey president.
I think we're trendsetters.
The dopey president made a rule about everybody's bathroom
in
the whole
country.
Yeah,
now the whole, I think we set off a firestorm.
So if you want to be able to intelligently shut that down. I'm not saying agree with it or be smart about why people are, I don't know. If you'd just like to be able to combat it without just, you know, being pointed at and being called a hater.
I just bought some 12 pumps. I don't know if I really want to shut that down just yet.
They're red. You can't miss them. Are they
the
like
guy,
those?
The guy at TSA liked them.
That's why they search the bags, you know. They just want to know.
That's right.
They probably get points for that.
They
probably have like a
in the lunchroom, there's a board. There's a scoreboard.
They
in
have
there.
Like a bingo board back there, you know, who can find what.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. I should go to work for TSA. I'd have a lot more fun. So,
it's called pin the shoes on the passenger.
You might want to go back and listen to that show with Walt Heyer. It was interesting, and actually he gave us a lot of really good ammunition, and it's stuff he can talk about because he would be an expert. And we, of course, would just be listening. You can hear us act awkward, too. I mean, that was fun. Usually we're pretty chatty, but it was stressful. We didn't say much. I had somebody tell me afterward. They were like, why didn't you guys? Yeah, it's like, come on. Obvious reasons. We didn't know what we were wading into a topic we knew nothing about. It was
That's
a
right.
scary topic, too. So anyway, we just did it to inform you and to give you some ammo. That's usually why we do stuff, is so that you can, you know, push back on some of this stuff. We can't push back on it if we don't have any information. So, that being said, we air Sunday afternoons from noon to 2 here on the Pacific Coast in Redding, California on KCNR 1460 AM. And then we usually have an archive up by 3:30 or 4, something like that, that is sometimes commercial-free by then. At least it's commercial-free by the evening. So if you want to send the program to somebody, that's the time to do it. Then on the East Coast, we air Saturdays from 2:30 to 4 Eastern Time on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. And they air on WNJC 1360 AM. They also have a call-in phone number that just streams the shows 24/7. So we've got that posted right on the front page of the website, which is wethepeopleradio.us. And there you have
there
it.
There it is.
We got a ton of information about our guest, Elaine Willman, who has been on with us before, but today we're talking about her new book. And her book was coming out last time, but I don't think it was actually out at that time. It's called Slumbering Thunder. And hold on, I got a little blurb about it. It is a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism that's overwhelming America. And unless you've had your head firmly in the sand, I think you know this is an issue. And if you live in the West, it's a huge issue. And if you live in the East and think it doesn't affect you, you're paying for it. So there you go. Everybody has to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Enough said, eh?
Yeah.
So Elaine's an expert. Elaine?
How are you?
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning, Aaron.
So rather than us giving your bio, you know, because it always sounds kind of stilted, why don't you give people a little background on how you got into this topic and why you're an expert?
Well, and I don't call myself by that term.
Okay, we'll just do that for you.
But I will say I have been obsessively researching federal Indian policy, which are government decisions. That's separate from tribal culture and my respect for tribal culture. I've been researching these government decisions on Indian policy for 25 years because I've lived on three separate Indian reservations for 25 years. The Yakima for 16 years, the Oneida Reservation in Wisconsin for 8 years, and more recently I'm coming up on my first year of living here on the Flathead Reservation in outside of Ronan, Montana. So this, for some reason, is a subject I cannot let go of. And over this 25-year period, I have seen, and particularly in the last 7 years, I have seen the just unconscionable expansion of tribalism as a governing authority, replacing state authority and state protections for its citizens on and off Indian reservations. As you guys know, all the reservations were opened up in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they are predominantly populated by non-tribal people. And those tribal people are not under the authority of the tribal government. All the constitutions of the federally recognized tribes give them complete authority over their enrolled tribal members and their Indian trust lands, and that's that. They have no authority over non-tribal persons and properties. However, in the last 7 years, actually longer than that, but very escalated in the last 7 years, this authority of tribal governments over non-members and non-member properties is really rolling out. I'm going to talk about why I wrote this book and what's in it and why it's a useful tool. But it was really ironic that I read the Federal Register every morning, the table of contents.
God love you.
And just as an example of why this book is important and what I'm saying about the spread of tribalism is in today's Federal Register. It's our lovely EPA folks, once again.
There we go.
You know, they're the ones EPA. They've reinterpreted. They like to reinterpret what Congress really means, which is EPA saying that we're going to do whatever we want or whatever Obama tells us. And so they did that with the waters of the United States, and now they've expanded waters of the United States for tribal government. And in this May 16th, it's effective tomorrow, Monday, May 16th, Federal Register, is a revised interpretation of Clean Water Act tribal provision. And this provision, this is a 15-page, three-column, you know, final rule, and ironically, it's effective the day it comes out. It's effective tomorrow as well.
Wow.
And it gives tribal governments the opportunity to have treatment estates for water quality upon their whole reservation, their entire reservation. And what that means is that most of the reservations have counties and towns and municipalities. I know the Yakima Reservation has three or four big municipalities that have their own independent municipal water systems and such as that. This will give tribal governments control of water quality over your municipal water systems, county water system, all water systems on a reservation. That's what I mean by the spread of tribalism over non-tribal facilities and peoples and properties. Now EPA is saying, hey, tribe, you can go in and you can set the quality standard for municipalities on your reservation. I hope your listeners can pay attention to this and get a hold of their elected officials. Somebody should be raising all holy hell on something. But this is just one example of why we have to push back on the federal government spreading tribal authority over non-tribal persons and properties, and now over municipalities and counties and states within the reservation.
So Elaine, how many people, you know, I mean, how many people actually live in a place that would be affected by a, you know, by a reservation that way? I mean, most.
Yeah, because in our town, we have a reservation, and they do a real good job on a lot of things. And
but I don't know that it overlaps on our town.
I don't think it does.
Would it be only in really big places, or give us a few?
It would be on Indian reservations. I'll use the Yakima Reservation as an example. The Yakima Reservation includes a town. It includes many towns. It has three pretty good-sized towns, Toppenish and Wapato, and what's the other one? I'm drawing a blank on the third one. The three big towns. And the Yakima Reservation is so large it encompasses three counties.
Oh.
Yakima, Kittitas, and Klickitat. The population on the Yakima Reservation is 80% Hispanic, 10% Anglo, and 10% Native American. So that tribal government, whose population is 10% Native American, will have 100% control of water quality over those municipalities. On the Oneida Reservation, the village of Hobart and the town of Oneida, all of these reservations, all of your larger reservations are co-located in counties and towns. And those counties and towns answer only to their states. Now they will answer for their water quality to a tribe. There's something fundamentally wrong with that.
Yeah, yikes. Elaine, we've got to take a really quick break here, and we're going to come back with we have our whole show is on this, because obviously it's something most of us are not real conversant on, and it's really easy to get pigeonholed. Well, you're just a racist or whatever. And when we come back, I'd like you to give some of your other background, Elaine, because that of course shoots that whole theory right in the head. So.
Yeah.
We will be right back. Okay. We are chatting with our guest, Elaine Willman, who is the author of Slumbering Thunder, a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism that's overwhelming America. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Joining We the People Radio, we are chatting with Elaine Willman. She is the author of a brand new book called Slumbering Thunder. And for those of you that are like, I don't know if I need a book on federal Indian policy because that just doesn't go with the other stuff on my shelf, it's actually a layperson's reference manual for understanding the basics of federal Indian policy, including tools for challenging federal and tribal government overreach. How handy is that? Because usually the biggest problem is we can't challenge it because we don't know enough about the topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks for that, Elaine. And give folks a little bit of your background. We've done that on previous shows, but some people may not have heard those yet.
Yes, but first let me ask if I'm coming in clearly. Can you hear me clearly?
You are. Or we would have, had to throw the whole thing into halt mode and get that squared away. No, you're good.
You folks are kind of coming in sketchy to me, and I don't know why that says so. As long as
it's probably just because we're sketchy.
Maybe that's a good thing.
It's just because we're sketchy, that's all.
So,
no, you're loud and clear.
Yeah, courageous people are sketchy, you know?
Well, that's good that one of us isn't sketchy, though, and it's really important you're the one.
Well, I do like folks to know that I'm of strong Cherokee ancestry. My mother and grandmother were rural Cherokee, and I grew up with a lifetime affection for American Indian culture and history and my own ancestry. And my husband is a Shoshone and a direct descendant of Sacagawea. And so it's really odd, and I really had to do some personal sorting to make the distinction between my respect and affection for tribal members, tribal culture, all things American Indian history, that is separate from government decisions that have created this escalating problem that is removing state constitutional protections and state authority and state jurisdiction and state protection of its natural resources. The U.S. Constitution never contemplated tribalism as a governing system in states. It is fundamentally unconstitutional. But nevertheless, it manifested around 1934 and it's growing worse. So I make those clear distinctions. And I also work very hard to assist tribal members wherever I'm at, because they do not have civil rights. They do not have the Bill of Rights. They do not have free speech, due process, speedy trial. They don't have any of that as an enrolled tribal member in their tribal government. So they cannot comfortably speak for themselves, and they dare not disagree with their tribal government leaders, lest there be a consequence, and sometimes those consequences are pretty severe. So that's why I focus on the government decisions. Every federally recognized tribe is a decision to federally recognize a tribe, and it goes from there. The Clinton administration expanded federal agency escalation of tribal programs and policies with an executive order, where the Bureau of Indian Affairs used to be the sole agency working with tribal governments. Now all 29 federal agencies are working with 567 recognized tribes. That's a lot of decisions that are rolling out tribalism, replacing our constitutional rights in states. And it's particularly troublesome if you happen to be a non-tribal landowner or resident on an Indian reservation. It's getting quite serious.
So, or if your water starts, I mean, what we're seeing up in Klamath is the water has been, water rights have been given over to the tribes. So now farmers and irrigators, and I think we'll probably get into that a whole lot, but yeah, this is affecting our food supply.
And that's the goal. Food, crop production, taking down crop production in the western states is a goal, is an absolute primary target of the present administration, and confiscating water or through tribal governments or any other federal agency resource, confiscating state waters is the tool to knock out crop production. So that's huge right now. That's a real concern. The slumbering, unlike the first book I wrote, Going to Pieces, which is a true story of these two women that took a road trip across 17 Indian reservations, that's the kind of book that's a narrative that you would read from first page to last page. Slumbering Thunder is a reference tool. It has six sections, and it's intended. Number one, I'm a layperson. I did attend law school for 2 years, but I'm certainly not an attorney. And I am speaking for myself in this book and nobody else. So it's strictly my own research and my own opinion. But it has six sections, Slumbering Thunder. The first section is for community leaders and elected officials. There's a section on Montana, because what's going on here on the Flathead Reservation is quite a dangerous model that we're all confronted with. There's a section on my favorite beast, EPA. And within that EPA section, I've provided a scoping tool under the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. I've provided a scoping tool that follows that NEPA Policy Act verbatim and allows any layperson to follow that tool to provide comments on environmental impact studies that tribes put out or federal agencies put out. Very often, you know, the public should comment. There's a public comment provided, but folks get just bogged down in the legalese and the scientific language, and they're afraid to comment themselves. So the NEPA scoping tool in this book of Sunbrain Thunder makes it easy to do, to apply, to just look at any project, any single project, whether it's tribal or otherwise, that is an environmental impact statement. They can look at that statement and say, well, how does it affect air quality in my backyard? How does this environmental impact affect traffic in my community? And it just walks the reader through how to legitimately comment very factually about how the impacts affect your community. And it's a very easy tool to follow. So that's in the EPA section. I also did a section on the village of Hobart, Wisconsin, which I worked for 8 years, located on the Oneida Reservation. And the village of Hobart remains out of 1,370 local governments on Indian reservations, it remains the only one that really finally realized it was going to sink or swim. The tribal government was going to overwhelm the municipality, or it was going to stand up and push back. And they stood up and pushed back very, very successfully. So I put some of the documents from the experiences of the Hobart elected officials in that section to show municipalities that it can be done. And then there's a section on Indian gaming, those that are being affected by Class III casinos and stuff like that. And the last section is on tribalism, the spread of tribalism, which includes the now incorporation of Middle Eastern tribalism coming onto Indian reservations. So those are the six sections in the book. It's not the kind of book you need to read cover to cover, but it's the kind of book that can provide an instant resource with an index. If there's something you need to know, you can look in the index and find it in the Slumbering Thunder book. So, and it's all in layperson language, because I'm a layperson, and there's no point in me writing a book that people don't understand. So I really always write to the reader. I really write to the reader, assuming the reader hasn't a clue, which was exactly my condition 25 years ago. I didn't have a clue either 25 years ago. So that's what the book's about.
That is awesome. And, you know, one of the really big things when we wind up having to go, those of us who attend public meetings and need to, you know, pipe up on different things, the NEPA process, for those people who don't know, is the National Environmental Policy Act. And that's something that happens with land use decisions. But most people, when you say, well, there's a NEPA scoping meeting, there's a blah, blah, people are like, okay, I'm not going to go to that. You know,
yeah.
They don't feel qualified to say anything. So it's awesome to have a tool. We've put links for you on the website to the book, so you can get it through Amazon. You can get it, read it on, what do you call it, Kindle, you know, the little electronic book. I like real books, but, if you got to have the electronic one, you can do that. And let's see, we will be right back with Elaine Willman. We have to take another quick break. She is the author of Going to Pieces, The Dismantling of the United States of America, and her new book, Slumbering Thunder, Primer for Confronting the Spread of Federal Indian Policy and Tribalism. You guys are going to learn a lot today, and hopefully together we can make some kind of difference on this before it overwhelms us. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Took away our ways of life, the tomahawk and the bow and knife. Took away our native tongue and taught their English to our young. Made in Japan. Cherokee.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud to live, so proud to die.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in, just turn me loose.
Hey, good old Gene Autry.
Exactly. He used to be quiet and peaceful in the West. Now all we do is go to government meetings and fight about stuff. Exactly.
Say, Elaine, you were talking earlier about how Montana has really kind of become the proving grounds on a lot of this administration stuff that's coming down. Have you found that what goes on in Montana or passes in Montana is, you know, soon to be popping up in other states? Are they going to be the actual you know, the proving grounds for all this stuff for all the states? Oops, did we lose her?
Affected the folks here on the Flathead. That same federal process is being pushed on Idaho. It's being pushed in Washington State. Variations of it are going on in Oregon. And the bottom line is the model here is called the CSKT, that's Confederated Salish Kootenai Tribe, CSKT Water Compact. Rather than adjudicate water rights under the Federal Reserve Doctrine, the Indian Federal Reserve Water Rights Doctrine, rather than adjudicate what a tribal government really needs in the form of water for its lands and its people, the trend is the settlement agreement. And in this case, with the CSKT Compact, the tribe never followed the Winters Doctrine, the Federal Reserve Water Rights. It never followed that. It never quantified what it actually needed for its tribal members and lands here. It just claimed all the water coming into the reservation, going through the reservation, leaving the reservation. That's water in 11 counties, all the counties that are on the western border of Idaho. 11 counties. It claimed all those waters. And, of course, Montana is probably the most corrupt state of 9 states I've ever lived in. And Governor Bullock here and Attorney General Fox here thought that was a swell idea and signed an agreement with the federal government and the tribal government for this water settlement compact. And that agreement gave state waters to the tribal government to be placed into federal trust, these waters, on behalf of the tribes. And Governor Bullock threw in an additional $55 million state taxpayer dollars to help them do this. And The Attorney General Fox wrote extensive white papers to the legislators saying, oh, it's all good, it's all constitutional, not to worry, this is a good deal. And the state legislature, being badly misinformed, went along with it and passed this compact. The end result is that this current small tribal government now owns the Kerr Dam. It owns and operates the Kerr Dam and controls all, it is a major hydropower dam in the Northwest, controls all the water coming off of that dam, the delivery of it and the sale of it, and the rate setting of it without any public services commission review, controls all the water coming off of that dam. It controls the irrigation water and access to it or not. So this tribal government now controls all access to water on this reservation. The Bureau of Indian Affairs owns the Mission Valley Power Company, which controls all access to electricity on this reservation. And this includes, you know, 11 towns. And so 35,000 Montana citizens have been completely abandoned by their state, are completely abandoned by spineless Howard County commissioners. So it's no other word for it. So they're basically uninformed, but they certainly don't want to be called racist, so they're going along with this.
Sure.
Of course.
They have nobody. The Montana citizens, 35,000 Montana citizens, have zero federal, state, tribal, local government they can turn to. They are flat abandoned and at the mercy of a tribal government for access to water and access to power. There's nothing legal about any of that. But that's our current reality, even before this compact gets ratified by Congress, if it does. It hasn't even been delivered to Congress yet, but they're already implementing it. So we're already abandoned by all forms of government and at risk for water and power.
Wow. And, you know, we see that up in Northern California, Southern Oregon on the Klamath. You know, they were following these agreements, supposedly agreements that supposedly represented everyone, which really didn't. But these agreements were law before they ever became law. Congress did not pass the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement on purpose. You know, we had somebody on this station last week who was talking about those agreements not going through because Congress wasn't paying attention. Yeah, newsflash, paid a lot of attention and worked really hard to keep those from passing. It was not a good deal for the irrigators at all. So.
No.
And somebody was writing in the chat room about some of these water rights groups, and I asked if they were on the same page. It was a Western Montana Water Rights Group, and, you know, you never can assume that those folks are working on behalf of the people.
No, and the propaganda that went out on this to sell this beast, there's a group in Montana, and you may have some similar little phony groups down there in the Klamath area, in the Redding area. There's a group called FARM, and it's Farmers in Agriculture. I don't know what the FARM stands for, but it pretends to be a grassroots association of cattlemen and farmers that support this compact. The reality is, it's a group put together, entirely funded by tribal government dollars, and it publishes these full-page ads in all the papers in Montana. And it publishes radio ads every 15 minutes on your major radio stations and television ads. It's even on the Internet Explorer. Hugely moneyed up, phony organization whose players are Montana Department of Natural Resource administrators, are some state legislators who've, got something coming for that. It involves three governors. It has nothing to do with cattlemen and farmers, but they hold themselves out to be this grassroots group which sold this compact publicly just before the state legislature's vote, and it's just recently resurrected and running that whole big propaganda program again because folks like me and some others are raising holy hell. So now they're redoing that whole ad. The tribal government has moneyed them up again to talk about the blessings of this compact. It's just disgusting, and it's a phony group. But a lot of folks who aren't paying attention think, well, gosh, those farmers and cattlemen think it's okay. It's a farm group when it's anything but.
Yeah,
see, so that's part of the problem.
Well, and the tribes...
Yeah, because people hear that, and then they think, well, gee, if the farmers are for it, it must be good.
Because they say that all the time.
Exactly.
Up north of us, you know, Klamath water users, well, they represent all the agriculture guys. Well, they represent about a third. You know,
yeah.
And I think the number was 15% in Klamath County. So you have 1,200 farmers up there, and you have a very small percentage of them. But those guys have money. They've got attorneys, back in Washington. And so, and the media totally has bought into them hook, line, and sinker. So they constantly put out, oh, these guys have saved everybody. Oh, they've got it all figured out. It's probably the exact same thing.
And there's a couple of other patterns that I think are present in your neighborhood as they are in mine. One is that this compact, the original agreement for the federal government, state, and tribe, and BIA, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, they all got together and signed an agreement to put in this water compact in 1999 behind closed doors when the public was oblivious. From 1999 until they announced it in late 2011 or 12, they pulled it all together secretly and then just launched it on the public. So I have a feeling that if somebody were to deep research what the Klamath folks are enduring, they're going to find that all of these pieces were put together long before anybody saw it coming and long before anybody announced it. That's one pillar that we've surfaced here. The second one is really interesting. I was just reading about some of the insurrection on the Klamath Irrigation District Commission Board, that there's a lot of conflict on that board, where there's a majority of the Klamath Irrigators, commissioners on the district that want to save those dams, and there's a minority that doesn't. And that same thing is going on with the Flathead Joint Board of Control, which has oversight of the irrigation. They don't have control of the water, but they have oversight of the irrigation, if that makes any sense. In any event, we have the divide and conquer strategy nailing this irrigation district here, just as the divide and conquer strategy has been extremely effective in your neighborhood. And that is planned by federal operatives who have inserted themselves on these commission districts. We have a fellow on the Flathead Joint Board who was the managing director of the International Monetary Fund for years. He's a longtime globalist diehard bureaucrat who decided to retire conveniently right out here on the Flathead Reservation about the time these behind-the-scenes plans were coming together. And he got himself elected to the Flathead Joint Board. And there has been division and hostility. This board is eating its young, much like I think the Klamath Irrigation District folks are suffering, too. You know what I'm trying to say
here? Oh, yeah. You know, and the Klamath Irrigation District represents, you know, about two-thirds of the irrigators. It's a much larger representation. And when their board flipped to oppose this, you know, who's showing up in all their stuff, right? We've got Ed Sheets, same guy.
Yep.
Same guy that's on your end, and he supposedly is an independent facilitator, except he has a long history of being paid by Bureau of Reclamation.
Yeah, just happened to show up.
Just happened to show up, same guy, you know. And the good part is, though, we also have Larry Kogan, the attorney, who is helping you guys and helping the folks out here. So, you know, two can play at this game. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Elaine Wellman. We are chatting about federal Indian policy this morning and how it affects your life, because it does. It's coming to a water district near you. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
One night when the moon was bright on a moonlit day, that is where I found my little Cherokee maid. Memory of that night of love is lingering yet, and I know I never will forget. My little Cherokee maiden, I love her so, and though we're far apart, I know I'll never betray my love for her, for anybody else's heart. Someday I'll make a trip back to that Cherokee strip, and I'll carry her away with me. And straight as an arrow flies, we'll ride to paradise, my sweet little chickadee, my little Cherokee maiden and me. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand, maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'll be giving away when we all live together. Talking about together now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'd be giving away when we all live together. I'm talking about together now.
Ah, yes, togetherness, the ultimate myth. You know, my mom dreamed about togetherness. You know, I'm the oldest of five kids. I can still hear my mom in the back of my mind, you know. Can't you all just get along? As we're pummeling each other in the car. Back in the day.
Did she raise Rodney King, too?
You played Cherokee Maiden. I love that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. We played that last time, too. That's a good one, huh? Bob. Bob's absent, but he's not gone.
Yeah. I was going to mention that you have Ed Sheets in your neighborhood.
Yes.
We coincidentally have Ted Sheets here. He is the individual that is chair of the compact implementation team.
Oh, goody.
Which should not be implementing anything, and he's the man getting it done here, and he's the man getting it done there. He's an independent consultant. He's not a federal employee. And I think there's a reason for that. The feds can hire I call him a hitman. They can hire the great implementer, Ted Sheets, as a private consultant. And then if he screws up, the feds can say, well, it's not our fault. It's that consultant.
Yeah, exactly.
So they say arm's length, but they use him and pay him handsomely to come in and get her done here on the Flathead and down there on the Klamath. So I have no kind words for Mr. Sheets.
No, and I've sat through many of his meetings. I mean, it's ridiculous. In the one quasi-public meeting that we had about the Klamath Hydro Settlement Agreement, literally the people who were the stakeholders, you know, everything I say seems to have quotes around it, but yeah, the stakeholders. As soon as the members of the public spoke, the stakeholders all got a shot at him. They got to sit there and disagree with him and cut him down, and I've never seen that in a public meeting before. It was crazy. So, you know, if he's a professional facilitator, you know, all politics aside, he sucks at his job. But we have a tab at the top. We've got a little debate going on in the chat room about, our good friend, the operative, Dr. Kate. And somebody in here is confused about whether or not Dr. Kate's on the good guys or the bad guys team. Let me help you. Bad guys. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us and look at the top, you will see a tab that is labeled Dr. Kate. We thought she was important enough to give her a whole tab on our website, as well as Mr. Ed, who would be Ed Sheets, and a Bayou Boy, aptly aimed, named by one of our...
Bayou Boy.
Bayou Boy would be John Bezdek from Bureau of Reclamation. Anyway, but yeah, who is this ubiquitous Dr. Kate? And we've done several shows on it, and there is a ton of information. So if you need any backup on that and the stuff she's been up to, it is all on our site. Please don't be taken in by the roving operatives, because she's shown up in the Klamath, too. Not recently, but in the early days of the Klamath problem.
All over the Northwest.
Exactly.
She served under Ada Deer in the Clinton administration and under Babbitt, and she wrote the Indian water policies for the whole country, and particularly all over the Northwest. And it was very interesting that she was the one that showed up to help, quote-unquote, the farmers and cattlemen here, but kept them on a very narrow track of just hydrology only, and was not discussing the major legal violations here. I will say, very recently, in the recent months, and I don't know whether it has to do with posting your Dr. Kate website, I don't know what it has to do with, but in the recent months, she has been writing, sounding a lot like me, nailing the federal government, the state government, the tribal government, talking about the unconstitutional pieces of this. She's been reversing course in her writings very recently. I don't know why, but I do know that it's more help than she's ever helped before.
Well, cause
and so to that extent, it's I guess it's helpful. Just getting information out that's factual and comprehensive
sure.
is helpful.
Well, when we first posted that, the big problem was that she was always offering to help. The problem was everybody she helped got their clock cleaned. So how much help? She was either really bad at helping, or she was an operative for the other side pretending. So
well, it's just hard to know. It's just hard to know. And she no longer shows up at any public appearances here, but she does continue writing. And I will say that a couple of her recent pieces have been very helpful and very unlike anything she's ever written before. So that's kind of a strange turn of event.
Interesting.
But it's a turn of event in the right direction.
Well, we did a whole show on her with... actually, we had a kind of an unnamed insider. We don't do that a whole lot, but it was somebody who worked for one of the three-letter agencies in the federal government, and she was willing to come on with us and, you know, give us some information, some background on Kate. So not only is there quite a bit of information posted that you can just read and reference, tons of, oh, my gosh, how many, 20, no, sorry, I lied, 34 different footnotes. So I think it's fairly well-researched, And then we had a gal who worked with her who kind of gave us the back channel.
Well, you know, Aaron, there's two sets of our population in this country that are problematic in pushing back on this federal government overreaching, because by and large these tribal governments are being used as pawns, and many of their tribal members are just as much a victim as the rest of us. The federal agencies are really rolling out, as you know. The one population is the urban population, the ones in L.A. and New York and Seattle and Portland. The folks that live in the big cities, if they've never been on or near an Indian reservation, why would they even care? What do they know? They basically have that dancing with wolves mentality. They think there's an Indian reservation out there all by its onesies in a vacuum, and there's teepees and stuff, and that's the most they know. They don't realize that the Indian reservations that are predominantly non-Indians, there's a lot of counties and towns on these reservations, and that it's a very different world than what they see in the movies. But that's the urban mindset, is totally clueless. And that's the bigger population, and that includes your congressmen that serve those populations. The congressmen are just as clueless. The other half of the population is us rural folks. And you know, I don't know if this will relate to your rural folks in the Northern California and Klamath area, but I've met the most wonderful folks I've ever lived around here in Montana. These farmers and cattlemen, they're multi-generation on the land.
Yep.
They're the hardest working people. They have great family values. They believe in God, family, and country. They'll give you the shirt off their back. But they have no time. First, there's little time to become informed. And second, they're enormously trusting. Enormously naive and trusting. They actually believe if somebody speaks to them and tells them something, it must be true. So when folks like Ed Sheets or tribal leaders or state legislators or, anybody are manipulating them and lying to them, they don't get it. They believe it's true, and they're very, very vulnerable. They're also completely reluctant to stand up and speak up because they don't want to be unkind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They don't want to cause a conflict. And so they're more likely to wring their little hands and say, oh, well, as they're about to lose their livelihoods and their lands here.
Well, they think that if they work with people like Ed Sheets, that they can negotiate and it'll work out for them. You know,
but they are the true stewards of the land. I mean, if they weren't, it wouldn't be a multi-generational business. The land would be worthless and it would be completely scarred. But they do take care of the land.
Of
they don't need help from Washington. They just need to be left alone.
Yeah, supposedly, though, you know, only the tribes know what's good for, you know, the fish. And, you know, up here in Northern California, Southern Oregon, we see, and I'm sure it happens elsewhere, you know, they self-regulate on the fishing. So they've got a net stretched across the whole river. They take out as many fish as they want, and then they blame the farmers because the fish populations are down. Completely nuts. We'll be right back with Elaine Willman for a second hour here. We are chatting about her new book, Slumbering Thunder. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Just in case you didn't know, that was Jackson Brown, Redneck Friend. We were just talking about that like a long time ago when we first started this program kind of on a lark. It's like, oh, that's a funny song.
Yeah, you know, yeah. People know what that is. It's kind of funny. And it's been like 6 years. We're still playing it. Like, you got to be careful what you pick.
Yeah,
stuff like
it
that.
It could stick.
It could be there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good thing we kind of like it. Okay, so you can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us for those of you who didn't hear the first hour. And if you didn't hear the first hour, definitely go to the website and listen to it. You can also pick up the previous two shows we did with Elaine on January 24th of 2016 and February 7th of this year. She has written two books, Going to Pieces. It's The Dismantling of the United States of America. And Slumbering Thunder is her latest book, a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism overwhelming America. And it is overwhelming America. So if you don't live in an area that is inundated with issues involving federal Indian policy, you're paying for it. So it's either hitting you and you're paying for it, or you're just paying for it. And at the end of the day, when it affects your water, the water rights as much as it does out here in the West, you know, that has implications for anybody who values private property. Because without your water rights, you don't have private property. There's no point.
Yeah.
So, Elaine, what? Where do you want to go this second hour?
Well, you just mentioned water rights, and I thought it might be good to remind the listener that when these Indian reservations were opened up under the Dawes Act and individual Indians were given their own land, they were allotted out, and each, rather than communal living, the goal of Congress in those years was to help American Indians become full citizens like every other American citizen and let them be property owners and vote. And so they were given allotments, and those allotments, with those allotments under the Dawes Act, they were given a water right attached to their allotment that runs with their land in perpetuity. Congress gave them that. And likewise, when the homesteaders came onto the reservations and homesteaded land and got their patents also included a water right in perpetuity attached to their homestead lands. What has happened here on the Flathead is that those water rights have literally been stolen by the tribe and the state and the federal government. They've been removed from those landowners and capitalized to acquire the dam and to implement this whole thing. So those water rights are null and void until we get this compact reversed. And I don't know to what degree you have allotted land and homestead land in your irrigation district areas there, but those same water rights there would be just as vulnerable as the ones that we have technically lost for now here. That's part of the battle. Is taking down property rights, water rights, constitutional protections of their state, if all of the above going on here.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and as far as private property beyond the reservation, how, you know, got any ideas on how this will spread, I guess?
Well, it's spreading on and it's spreading off reservation in two ways. One is the tribe has been given authority over all the water coming up all the little tributaries and into the Flathead Lake and Flathead River, and it controls all the water in 11 counties, and by that means that the public access and use of water is contingent on tribal government oversight and approval in 11 counties. There's three counties that are within the reservation, and there's eight that are not. But those eight that are not are affected to the extent that the public is affected by the water rights that the tribe has on the water. So the second piece is this aboriginal land, their hunting and fishing land. For decades, the term aboriginal had no legal force in effect, and it still should not. But under the Obama administration, and understand, you cannot have aboriginal land and state land. It's either or. Mm. So if it's aboriginal land, that means the state has lost its authority. More recently, this term aboriginal land has been given jurisdictional legs, where it's not just the right for tribal members to hunt and fish, it's the right for the tribal government to control what's going on their aboriginal land. Now think about it. The whole North American continent is aboriginal land. And Obama is pushing out this Aboriginal thing to expand tribalism beyond the boundaries of its reservations. That's where those living around and near a reservation are also at risk. That's part of this spreading.
Sure. Well, and, you know, like what we see up on the Klamath is that the Indians regularly talk about calling, putting a call on the water.
Yeah.
You know, meaning that it affects all the farmers and ranchers who would be irrigating, farmers mostly up there.
Yeah, it does. And
that takes effect immediately. I mean, that just shuts the water off.
But it's never gone through court. That's the thing. They've never been able to actually fight this the way our due process was, you know, supposed to go.
And the feds are very smart, and so are the tribes. The tribes know that they need to stay out of courts because this is all illegal. So do the feds. And so the big trend is settlement agreements. We're going to put this all together with settlement agreements, and then we don't have to go to court. And that's the tool that is just killing the western states. You know?
Yeah, really, and bottom line is...
need to be... Go ahead.
Well, and bottom line is, if you don't sign the agreement, oh, we're shutting off your water. You know, the even the Bureau of Reclamation, we did a whole program on that here a few weeks ago with Larry Kogan. But the Bureau of Reclamation either overtly or covertly sort of leaks out, oh, by the way, we're going to shut your water off. So between the tribes and Bureau of Reclamation on big things like the Klamath Project, you've got 1,200 farmers with a gun to their head.
Yeah, and it's a crapshoot.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's thank you, federal government. Using the tribal governments, not that they're not willing pawns, but to a large extent they are pawns. Federal government is reversing history in the western states. It is doing everything it can to reverse the Dawes Act, to reverse the Homesteaders Act, to reverse the state's authority of that it owns all of its waters. It's reversing a whole lot of history and acts that settled the West, that created the states, that created the West.
And they're just putting it all, they're putting it all into federal control.
Right, exactly. There's which leads me to another kind of 40,000-foot level. I've seen kind of four separate groups, and maybe you guys can add to this, four separate groups. Each group has a very different mission, but their missions harmonize. One would be the tribal governments. Your radical leaders of the tribal governments want the white man off their reservation. That's their dream, white man off their reservation. The Goodinis, the environmental NGOs, they want the people off the land in large areas of the western states. The feds want to reduce and eliminate state authority and state rights. The feds are really assaulting states, and you can see that at almost every level of our federal government now. And then there's those wonderful globalists who want the one world order. And when you look at the Agenda 21 and 2030 maps, there are no states. There's really no United States. So those four groups, tribes, greenies, feds, globalists, although they have separate long-term goals, those goals all match. And they are the strange bedfellows that are assaulting this country. They truly are. And that's what this election is about, too. This presidential election is, we're either going to restore and remain a separate nation with 50 states, or we're going to go the way of the globalists. That's really what this presidential election is about. And the tribes are a big player in this election because they can contribute heavily to both political parties or the candidates that will do their bidding. It's at federal, state, and local election levels. The tribes money up the candidates they want. And so do the greenies, and so do the globalists. So it's up to us American people as individuals, and that gets back to why I so dearly wish these wonderful Montana people would stand up, would push back, would speak up. I mean, I'm called all kinds of names, but by golly, I will not be muzzled. And if we don't stand up and push back and save this country, we're gone.
Yeah.
But depending on how this election turns out, we're in deep trouble because all these separate groups have a long-term goal that there's no longer a United States. That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so for all those people who think it doesn't affect them, hopefully that that makes this a concern that you might have. So if you want to get smart about this, get Elaine's book. It's called Slumbering Thunder. Just came out, what, March? Is it March of this year, Elaine?
Yeah, it's on all the major book websites, and it's available in stores. If it's not in your store, you can ask your store to order it. Along the lines of what we were just talking about, I'd like to read a little quote I put in.
Hold that thought, though, because we've got to take a really, really quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
And finish out the hour with Elaine Willman, author of Slumbering Thunder. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn's busted. You can crawl back home, say you were wrong. Stand out in the yard and cry all night long. Go ahead and water the lawn. I give a damn busted. Outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. Oh, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. Village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. Hey, and pass it around. 'Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. She's a one of a kind.
You're joining We the People Radio. And, of course, we're chatting about issues that affect everybody, although you might not have known that before. So today we're talking about federal Indian policy with Elaine Willman. All right, Elaine. Sorry, I had to cut you off there.
Well, I thought I'd like to share a little quote that kind of addresses what we're talking about each of us as individual citizens in this country. We either, you know, if we snooze, we lose. If we do not speak up, we're going down. And I thought that this particular quote really fits. It starts with, the danger to America is not Barack Obama, but a citizenry capable of entrusting a man like him with the presidency. It will be far easier to limit and undo the follies of an Obama presidency than to restore the necessary common sense and good judgment to a depraved electorate willing to have such a man for their president. The problem is much deeper and far more serious than Mr. Obama, who is a mere symptom of what ails America. Blaming the Prince of Fools should not blind anyone to the vast confederacy of fools that made him their prince. The Republic can survive a Barack Obama, who is, after all, merely a fool. It is less likely to survive a multitude of fools such as those who made him their president. That's from the Czech Republic President Václav Klaus. I thought that summed it up pretty good. It's the American citizens who put him in office.
Yeah. And for all those people who think that, like, Donald Trump is an extreme option, well, if you voted for Barack Obama, you gave us Donald Trump. I mean, that really is where that all comes from.
Yeah. We're just not, we as citizens are just either too busy or too apathetic or too something.
I think it's a combination.
Well, and there's so much of it. You know, Elaine, like with this, you probably have so many people who live in that area who will be affected by the things that are happening who just are flat overwhelmed.
They are. They are overwhelmed, and they're they value friendship. They value friendship. Let me give you an example. I have some wonderful friends who have 20 or 30 acres, and they know they're going to lose their property is going to devalue. They're likely to lose their irrigation. They're likely to lose their property. But they do not want to risk losing the friendship of a person that they have known for years that supports the compact. And so rather than speak up on their own behalf to save their property, they would rather retain the long-term friendship. I mean, that's absolutely mind-boggling to me, because I would think a friend would want them to save their property. But, I mean, that's the kind of thinking that some of the folks here, I mean, it's commendable to value friendship to that level, but to lose your own land and everything you've worked for years because you don't want to upset a friend who doesn't agree with you. It's just crazy.
Or that the meetings are really contentious. I see that a lot too.
They just don't want to go anymore because there's too much conflict.
Exactly. We've seen that so much. The meetings get confrontational, and then people, I'm not going to go. All they do is fight. I can't handle that. And the next thing you know, they win. You know, you can't let them do that. You got to stay in the fight.
Yeah, and I
know.
And
more of it.
They think that the government guys are going to, you know, all these agreements and stuff. Well, if we get an agreement together, then that's going to be good for everybody. But a lot of times, I mean,
that's the power of decades of consensus building and communalism that is tearing us apart.
Well, and they're told by sometimes their long-standing attorneys, and different people who maybe are getting huge payoffs for land idling or selling their water. You know, maybe they're pumping water, so they're getting.
That's a big thing now.
They're getting a ton of government
your land
money.
And get a paycheck. It's more profitable not to farm than it is to farm. So, you know, let's just keep everything the way it is because I don't need the water.
So they want to sign on to the agreements that actually never solve the problem because it keeps the money going, even though it basically screws all their neighbors, and I've never understood that part.
And that's a tool for taking down crop production. That's another way to get it done.
Yep.
Like the San Joaquin Valley is 1 million acres of non-production now, and it used to be 20% of our food in the country. It's taking down crop production.
Yep, and I truly believe that's going to come back and bite us. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, but when you have so much of our food now coming from out of the country, that's a slippery slope. I mean, all we have to do is have a hiccup in the food chain there, and you're going to see empty grocery store shelves, or you're going to see, you know, $4 lettuce, and people are going to come uncorked because they don't understand what happened. You know, they turned the other way. They kind of turned a blind eye because it didn't affect them, and now all of a sudden their groceries are unaffordable.
Do you have a lot of environmentalists tangled up with your tribe up there?
There are in the state that support this compact, that support the tribe. And, you know, the danger of this compact is that there's 6 other tribal governments in Montana, and as quick as this tribe gets their compact ratified, the other 6 tribes will tell the governor, hey, you have to treat us the same. We want ours. And very shortly, the federal government will own all of Montana's state waters in trust for the tribes. That's the danger of this, because the state government will have to treat all tribes the same. So whatever this tribe accomplishes, the others will get theirs. And then there's no water that's any longer owned by the state of Montana.
Wow.
It's just incredible. It really, really is. You know, there's another piece I'd like to talk about. And
sure.
We're at preliminary stages, but that's this Middle Eastern connection. So I don't know if there's time now or...
Sure, we have a whole half hour.
A minute. Oh, good. Well, as you know, Mr. Kogan has done some extensive research, as have I, and I would encourage your listeners, just for kicks and giggles, go to aljazeera.com. And you'll see an abundance of news articles about how excited these Middle Eastern countries are to be working with Native American tribes in the United States. There's an awful lot of information on the website. You can Google things like Native American and mosques, Native American and Muslims. and things come up. The whole North American continent, the Canadian reserves in Canada, the Indian reservations in the United States, are being infiltrated by Middle Eastern countries. And this is with the inadvertent, perhaps, or not, blessings of Congress. The Middle East, the tribal governments can now long-term lease their private Indian trust lands for up to 75 years to Middle Eastern countries without any federal approval and without any federal oversight. They can just bring the Middle Eastern money into their Indian trust lands. And that is extremely troublesome to me because it partners in with the Indian Energy Act, because all your dams and energy, major energy facilities are also on and near Indian reservations. So when you put Indian energy facilities, public facilities taken over by tribes like our Kerr Dam, and use, and Congress says, oh, and you can bring the Middle Easterners in there too, with no approval or oversight, we're in trouble. We've had 326 locations where Middle Eastern enclaves can settle in on land where nobody's looking. And so that really troubles me. And we're just in the first year of research on this, but it has actually been underway, at least on this reservation, since 2009. Very, very low profile, very quiet, but not secret. There's all kinds of information on the Salish Kootenai's website and other Indian websites. So this isn't secret information, but it needs to be surfaced because it is a concern. 326 Indian reservations subject to this opportunity, and 190 sanctuary cities across the country to bring in the refugees, and you have polka-dotted the United States with little Sharia enclaves, and that's Obama's goal. That's what he's busy doing as fast as he can. And to that extent, I think, my personal opinion, is that it's almost genocide for tribal members. You know, the federal government has mistreated Indians for a long, long time, and they've been making up for it with annual subsidies, but nonetheless, the federal government has allowed a monopoly on gaming, the quality of life, the addiction propensity, the addiction to alcohol, the predominance of meth and heroin and drug addiction on Indian reservations. And then the Department of Justice told the tribes, oh, yeah, and by the way, you can grow and sell marijuana on your reservation if you want to. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, here's some extra money for you. We'll let you bring the Middle Eastern money in, too. This is a very vulnerable people, a very good, colorful, wonderful, vulnerable people. But their tribal leaders are such gluttons for money from anywhere that I really think that bringing the Middle Eastern Muslims onto Indian reservations is the beginning of the end of that culture. It troubles me deeply for tribal members and for everybody else that lives around here.
I was going to say that it'll trouble everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the rookies bringing the pros in. To run everything.
That's totally true.
Yeah, they've been at the tribalism for thousands of years. They'll show them how it works.
And God knows they know how to take stuff over. We need to take a really quick break. On that scary note, we'll let you go get your blood pressure medication. And sorry, we haven't goofed off as much as we normally do while we're freaking you out. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Earth is just a dead thing you can claim. But I know every rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name. Think the only people who are people are the people who look and think like you. But if you walk the footsteps of a stranger, you learn things you never knew, you never knew. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Or ask the grinning bobcat why he grinned? Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
Come back. On the bank of the river stood running bare, young Indian brave. On the other side of the river stood his lovely Indian maid. Little white dove was her name, such a lovely sight to see. But their tribes fought with each other, so their love could never be. Running Bear, love little white dove, with a love.
Running Bear is my camp name.
Yeah, that's a different kind of bear.
Oh, sorry. What's my camp name? That could have been my theme song. Oh, that's fun. I like the dun 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 in the background. All right, we're chatting with Elaine Willman here, and she's got a ton of info for us. Right, fire away, Elaine.
I was gonna say, if I come on again, you have to play Kalijah. When I was a little girl in the Spokane Valley, we listened to KRM Country Western Station in Spokane, and I would hear Kalijah, and I would just start sobbing about poor old Kalijah.
How do you spell it?
I think it's K-A-W-L-I-G-A. Kalijah, the poor old Indian. Oh, man. Poor old Kalijah, he never got a kiss. Your listeners know that one. He was an Indian totem pole.
The wood Indian.
Kalijah was a wooden Indian standing outside the store. That's it.
Okay.
I was about 9 years old, and I would just cry about poor old Kalijah.
The wood Indian.
That's what I mean about my lifetime affection for all things Indian. that song just touched me as a little girl. Anyway, back to the
unpleasantness.
Yeah, back to this. I must be one of your more depressing guests.
No, we have a lot of depressing guests. We've got tons of them.
Yeah, don't let that bother you.
You're in really good company.
Very good. Well, I'm a real believer in getting information out there and to encourage others to just speak up and let them call you any name they want. By God, we have to preserve our free speech and get past this muzzling, this national muzzling that goes on. You know, if you think independently, well, you're just a hater. Well, that's goofy, and we're the ones that are letting that happen, and we need to stop. I think that's another reason Trump is so fascinating to people, is that he's frank, and he doesn't care what you call him. He's going to give you his thoughts, and more of us Americans need to give the government our thoughts, you know? So, anyway, on this subject of this Middle Eastern, there's one other little piece. It's in the epilogue of Slumbering Thunder.
Okay.
That we were talking about how I think this commingling of American Native Americans with Middle Eastern tribalism is a death knell for American Indians. I really think it is. And I just think it's abominable that Congress would allow this. But anyway, here I just have a couple of paragraphs I'd like to read. I try to imagine nonviolent domestic tribal leaders accustomed to hearing yes to all requests or demands, and very comfortable in complete reliance upon others to provide annual certainty for basic needs. These domestic tribal leaders, seated across the table from Muslim Brotherhood folks, is a perilous position. Failure to cooperate with Muslim extremists results in guaranteed violence to any reluctance or opposition. These can be located where no state or governments... Wait a minute, I just lost one. No matter how much Middle Eastern money arrives to assist the poor American Indians, the stark reality is this. Sharia enclaves will locate on private lands of tribal governments where no state or local law enforcement has oversight. Vulnerable populations in private isolated locations is an obvious next move for penetrating the United States with additional pockets of Eastern civilization for destroying Western civilization. I really think that's what this is about. And I just think it's darn near treasonous, and it certainly puts Native Americans in the front row of harm from the Middle East. I really do.
And
so in
your research, you know, on this federal Indian policy, is there anything that can be done about that part?
Well, yes, I think that can be stopped by executive order. I think depending on who we get in the White House, that can be stopped by executive order, and or Congress can remove that little section of the Hearth Act of 2012 that allows this. Yes, it can be stopped, but it's not going to be stopped until people raise enough noise. And the problem for tribal members is they can't disagree with their tribal government. They get reprisals. I've been working with a woman, a wonderful, wonderful tribal woman here. She disagreed. She dared to stand up at a microphone and disagree with the idea of the tribe getting the dam. And she got a knock on her door from Child Protective Services and was told, "You're not a good parent."
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
Three of her girls removed, 19 months. She doesn't even know where they are. She didn't know where they are, and she had to wait for a tribal court hearing, and they kept rescheduling her hearing for 19 months. This is an enrolled tribal member who has to go to her tribal court. And the consequence she got for disagreeing with the tribal government was profoundly severe. It is just recently, this last week, got a tribal court hearing. She had an attorney that was very helpful. They had no evidence to accuse her of being a bad parent, and she will be getting her girls back next week. But 19 months of not even knowing where they are because you dared to disagree with your tribal government. And other members here have lost their jobs. They've lost logging leases, land leases. You know, you just dare not. Tribal members cannot disagree with their tribal government, and they have no civil rights, even though there is an Indian Civil Rights Act. It has no enforcement. Tribes don't enforce. Don't provide them with their civil rights. So it's us non-tribal people that have to raise the hell about this commingling of American Indian culture with Middle Eastern countries. We have to speak up on their behalf because they're not even able to without great risk.
Wow.
It's really troublesome.
I didn't know that was going on.
And they can't appeal to, like, they couldn't get an attorney and appeal to real court. If they're a tribal member, they're stuck with tribal court.
If she had lost in tribal court, I believe she could appeal it into a federal court. But she had to start in tribal court. And they delayed her 19 months.
Wow.
By just not scheduling her court hearing. 19 months she's without her girls. Didn't even know where they were. No communication. And fortunately, a tribal court judge, just this last week, said, "This is ridiculous. There's no evidence against her being a bad parent. You arrange visitation and the return of her girls." And so she is getting them back. But look how long it took. And thank God for one, wise tribal judge. You know, it's just scary. You know, the Indian Child Welfare Act gives the tribal government full parental control of all enrollable Indians under 18. They have parental, the tribal members do not have parental control over their own children.
Yikes.
That's a great tool for abuse, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
if you don't live on the reservation, because I know there are people who live all over the place who are enrolled in a tribe maybe in a different state, they're not quite so under the thumb, right? Or are they?
Well, they are. You know, they are to this extent. Congress granted the Indian Child Welfare Act a parental authority to tribal governments because tribal lobbyists went in wringing their hands to Congress, "Our people, my people, we need to preserve our culture. We need to have governance over our culture." And so Congress said, "Okay, here's the Indian Child Welfare Act. Tribal governments have control over all enrollable children under 18 years. Now, remember that at least 3 out of 4 American Indians do not live on the reservations. And they've moved off. But if the tribal government population depletes or reduces because they need enrolled members for their subsidies, they can go claim an enrollable child and bring them to the reservation. They can go out of state. They can go across country and do that if they need to.
They can physically remove a child and put them on the reservation?
Right.
Holy mackerel.
Right. They control all adoption proceedings. that have been made. Well, you saw that we had a big case not too long ago, the baby Veronica case, where the mother was Hispanic. The father was an enrolled tribal member but had nothing to do with the pregnancy or the baby. And the mother put the child up for adoption to a wonderful couple in North Carolina, I think it was. And when the father came home, he was going to an Iraq where he had nothing to do with the pregnancy, didn't want the child. But for whatever reasons, when he came back home, he decided he did want the child. And they reversed that adoption. The child had only known her parents. They reversed that adoption, told that child they overturned the state Supreme Court who ruled for the adoptive parents, and it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That child's life was just torn apart under the Indian Child Welfare Act. And there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of cases similar to that because tribal governments have parental authority over enrollable children.
Wow.
It's just disgusting. It's just disgusting.
That is...
But it's another reason a tribal member isn't going to speak up.
Sure. That's a good way to keep people quiet. We need to take one last quick break, and then we're going to come back and finish out the hour with Elaine Willman, author of Slumbering Thunder. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Standing by the door. He fell in love with an Indian maid over in the store. Girl, I chose you. Girl, he stood there and said he never let it show. Cause he could never answer yes or no, 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 no. Poor old Elijah, well, he never got a kiss. Poor old Elijah, he don't know what he missed. Is it any wonder that his face is red? Poor Elijah, that poor old wooden bed. He always wore his Sunday feathers and held a tommy hump. The maiden wore cup beads and braids and hope someday he talk. Girl, I chose. Well, he stood there as a lonely ass can be. Cause his heart falls of an old pine knotted tree, tree to tree. Old oak Elijah. Ever since the days of old, men would search for wealth untold. They dig for silver and for gold, and leave the empty holes. And way down south in the Everglades, where the black water rolls and the sawgrass waves, the eagles fly and the otters play in the land of the Seminoles. So blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow from the Okeechobee all the way up to Micanopy. Blow across the home of the Seminoles, the alligators and the gods.
All right, Elaine, what have we missed? We've got 10 minutes.
Hey, thank you. You found Jared find Elijah? I just heard it.
I know. How fun is that? That's a good idea, though, to write a song about a cigar store Indian. Yeah, they must have.
Yep.
Must have walked by one a whole lot.
Well, there's a little girl, Elijah and Bambi and Old Yeller. Were three things that just tore my little childhood heart apart.
Oh, God, Old Yeller, don't even bring that up. That was that's a bad one.
Yeah. So thank you for that. I think I wanted to mention that Slumbering Thunder is also an e-book, and also Going to Pieces has been selling so big that the publisher did a second reprint on it and added an index. And I didn't realize how much content was in that book, because the original Going to Pieces doesn't have an index. But when they added an index to Going to Pieces, oh, my God, the index is really comprehensive. So actually both books are good reference manuals now because of the indexes in them. And they're both available in stores and online now. And they're both e-books. So there's a number of ways to acquire them and tell your friends, because these are the only two pieces out there that are talking about these government decisions. You know, in a manner, my heart is with the tribal members. I've had wonderful tribal friends on every reservation I've lived on, and I've helped them as best I can behind the scenes. So my heart is with the tribal members and with American Indian culture, and I want it to thrive and survive, and it is not thriving under these government decisions.
No, it's absolutely not thriving.
The culture is not thriving.
No.
The tribal leaders are, but the people are not.
Well, and we see, you know, what we're looking at here, they've got some of these tribal folks that I know they're trying to do the right thing, but they've got them convinced that, you know, taking out four perfectly good dams is going to give them more water, and getting rid of the hatchery that produces 6 million fish a year is going to give them more fish. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because the tribal members constitute 1% of America's population, and the waters are for all Americans, and the lands and resources are for all Americans.
Right.
And somehow there's been this mantra that only American Indians are stewards of the land, and only American Indians take care of Mother Earth. We all do. The farmers and cattlemen do. We all have. We all have the same fundamental interests. We really do. So it's based on a faulty premise from the gate.
Yeah.
That these rivers and waters are to be prioritized for 1% of our population. That's politics. That's not reality. You know, that's not really the way it should be. And yet, I'm one that promotes preserving the culture, the history. I think it's a noble history. We have been very unkind to the American Indians, much like we were very unkind with the blacks. We've done a lot of things wrong, but we've done a lot of things right. And we've tried to do right in many ways with all the money that goes out every year to these tribes, but it doesn't reach down to the people to improve their quality of life at all.
I don't think the money's actually helped. I mean, I think the money has kind of enslaved most of these folks.
They really are prison camps, these reservations, and they are enslaved, and they have no incentive. Most of them know nothing different. The ones that know something different leave. The ones that don't know any other world, that's all they know, and they are completely dependent on others to take care of them. And that's really diminishing of the noble American Indian warrior. You know, it really is. But that's where they're at, because of the money.
Yeah,
it's a shame. It's a shame. I grew up in Spokane, Washington, on the South Hill of Spokane, and learned about Chief Joseph and the Northwestern tribes, and they were magnificent. They were magnificent people. They really, truly were. They massacred some settlers, and settlers massacred them, and a whole lot of things were wrong. But they are magnificent people, but they're not living magnificently today. And I wish they were. I truly, deeply wish they were.
Yeah. Well, what besides reading the book and paying attention and getting involved in some of the public meetings that are going on in people, you know, in their area, any other good sources for them?
We have the organization that I'm a part of. I do not speak for them by any means, because I'm just one of 19 board members. But Citizens Equal Rights Alliance has a pretty helpful website. It's called CitizensEqualRightsAlliance.org. It has a pretty helpful website. And there's some Indian websites that will give you an idea of what's happening. One is Turtle Talk. TurtleTalkWordPress.com. That really is a great news site for whatever what's going on with all the tribes across the country. And there's another website called Indian Country Today that talks about what's going on across the country, both positive and negative. So there are, you know, you can just Google some words and all kinds of information comes up. But as I said, if you live in L.A. or New York or Portland or Seattle, why would you even bother? You know, what do you care? And that's really part of the big problem we have. And if you're a farmer or a cattleman, how much time do you have to sit at a computer and inform yourself?
it's really
hard for people to just take the time to inform themselves. I certainly think every American citizen should reread the Constitution. You'll find the term Indian tribes in there twice, but you won't find tribalism as a governing system in that Constitution. It's not there.
That's a really good
point. And somehow it's taking down our state sovereignties, our citizen sovereignty, and it's bloating the federal sovereignty.
I'm posting.
So the Constitution is really, yeah.
I'm posting the Turtle Talk. What was the other one you said, Elaine?
Indian Country Today.
IndianCountryToday.com. Today.
Those two websites are Native American websites that provide comprehensive news articles about what all the tribes are up to. And on those websites, folks can find out what the tribes in their neighborhood are doing these days and what the news is. And sometimes that news where a tribal government announces a new program, you can find out how that program is going to affect you as a non-tribal person on the reservation or off the reservation. The federal Indian policy is kind of a best kept secret. It's decisions made between tribal leaders and bureaucrats, and they're not widely published unless you read the Federal Register. Oh, and a reminder of Monday, May 16th, Federal Register. Now, the EPA has decided that tribes can control municipal water quality and county and public, you know, non-tribal water quality. That's going to be huge. And it's effective immediately, May 16th. It's effective tomorrow. These municipalities around the country are going to get knocks on their door from those tribes that pursue that program. And hey, we're here to tell you how your water quality is and what we want you to do.
Just yeah, that ought to scare a few people.
Well, it should, and I hope local elected officials within municipalities and Indian reservations snap to that and have a good response, a good, quick, fast response. Their congressmen, their state legislators should be very reactive to that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have learned a ton of stuff. We've got a lot of it posted on the website for you, the links that Elaine just gave us. The Citizens Equal Rights Alliance is on there, links to her books. And several articles. Will the United States go the way of Zimbabwe? That was a really interesting article. And I should have made myself a note for us to talk about that, Elaine. Maybe next time.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming on with us.
Well, you're very welcome. I always enjoy it. You guys are just a hoot. And I'm so proud of your courage that you do these programs, Aaron. Is it Bob? And
Bill.
Jared, and I don't know who all is out there, but thank you very much.
Bob's not here, only Bill.
Oh, well, thanks for being on, Elaine.
Thanks, Elaine.
All right, the archive's up, posted for you. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week. We're talking with Jim Beers on federal land policy in our national parks and Forest Service and BLM and all that stuff. See you.